welcome back to the Zeitcast, friends. I can barely talk. I was saying right after our little service here, which hopefully a number of you have experienced already by this point, but I am just, I feel like I'm about on drugs right now. I feel like I'm just coming out of like some of a whole nother place. Lan, thank you so much for your ministry tonight. So I can't tell you how, just how meaningful that this whole experience has been.
Thanks for having me. It's, I needed to release this.
Yeah. Well, it felt like that. It felt like, of course, that it was coming from such a soulful place for you. I know that's jumping in on the deep, you know, kind of deep into the pool, but it's kind of, that's how I'm rolling right now anyway, in terms of like, instead of like a slow build through biography and stuff. How are you doing? How are you feeling coming into this space tonight? What did it mean for you tonight to sing these songs in this space from where you are right now in this moment where we are?
Yeah. So this whole year, you know, we're United Methodists. And so this, like, even leading into this year, knowing that there were going to be so many decisions made between our denomination and then between our national, our federal government and the elections and things. And so much of it is deciding about how much people want to let you be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in that space, it's hard to breathe.
Mm.
That's why I felt like it was such a God moment when you texted me, last week, because I had literally just said, I need to get to a piano. Like, it's been my place where I go to breathe. When Trayvon Martin was killed, when George Floyd was killed, when COVID happened, when so many of things that it's just hard to process. How do we live through, but then how to also, I mean, right? Because we're spiritual leaders. So not only how do we live through, but how do we lead through?
Right.
We have to have that place to breathe. Because otherwise, all of that other stuff, if we don't find the release, all that stuff comes out in the wrong place.
That's right.
In the wrong way. And it's frustration that's guiding our thoughts.
Yeah.
Rather than response. Like we call it like reaction versus response.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like my reaction, I don't know. I couldn't even process one last week after the election. But I knew that before I could strategically respond, that my spirit needed to process a response.
Yeah.
So that's what this felt like for me.
That's so wise. And it was so funny. We have mutual friends, but never get to hang out like this. The level of impulse, because I felt like I was putting myself out there foolishly. Like, it was a lot of from a perfect stranger. Hey, Lan, and the fact that you would come in a week and all that. But I tell you, this sense of when you say that the piano is how you breathe. I mean, the experience in the room, it felt like oxygen. I don't think I realized, you know, Joel, even in the prayer beforehand, said something about like, for some of you, it felt like you haven't had a deep breath in a few days. I don't think I realized it hadn't until having that experience. And it was, gosh, it felt like oxygen. When you say, because I know there's place and I feel that in your sound, obviously there's room for lament, there's room for grief, there's room for anger, there's room for all things. But I'm curious as how do you gauge for yourself? But I think a lot of us who would aspire to try to do, and where we have to, by role of our vocation, whatever, to do some kind of leadership in the midst of these things, how do you discern when you feel like you're just kind of acting out, reacting versus coming from this place where there's room for all the emotion, but also there's a sense of being held and being grounded? Like, how do you know the difference for you?
Yeah, I feel like that's where, I don't know, we could go into so many deep levels of conversation, but I feel like sometimes we talk about the Imago Dei in so many different like service level ways. And so one of the ways that I teach all the time is it's literally seeing the face of God in other people and believing that we can experience God in communion with each other. But then it's also getting up in the morning and looking in the mirror and saying, God, I need to see you in me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so as I'm growing as a Christian, learning to more recognize God's voice.
Yeah.
I also learn then to recognize when it's my voice, my flesh, my hurt, my pain speaking, and not me making room for God to speak through me.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so like Andy Stanley talks about, like, so often you can't pour out of an empty cup, right? We need that refill.
Right.
And I always go the second step and add to this and say, you know, as spiritual leaders and even as Christians, so often we struggle to get our cup filled because there's so much crap in it already.
Yeah.
That God's like pouring on top of all, it's like getting a cup out of the dishwasher that didn't run and trying to pour fresh coffee in it. And it's just stale and moldy and it's filled with crud.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's how I feel. Like I haven't got a chance for God to just let me pour out my crud. So that God can pour in and use me as a fresh wind, fresh instrument. So we need these spaces to just like release. Like, so often we go to worship because we want to scratch the itch or check the box. But sometimes we need to be there just to just let it out. That's why, like, I don't know. And sometimes we find that out. That's why I'm glad I grew up in charismatic church. And I'm not speaking against non-charismatic church, but charismatic church, like part of it is like, you let it out.
You let it out.
Run, you flip. My grandmother used to fall out.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And my mom would shout and jump and all that. You know, you just let it out. And sometimes it was celebration, but sometimes it was pain. And sometimes it was prayer. Sometimes it was hope. Like, God, I believe you're going to do something in the middle of this.
And sometimes there'll be all those things at once. And that's the beauty of it, is not even having to parse it sometimes. And there's a place in God where, you get to a certain point, I don't know what's joy. I don't know what's pain. I'm just letting it go.
Just let it go. Like sometimes. And that's why I tell people, like, you may never be a charismatic worshiper. But find a space where you and God can get about each other.
That's so good.
God can just cry together. Like, God can cry with you. And you can be mad at God. And you can question God. And like, literally, like, we forget sometimes that faith is faith because doubt is doubt.
That's so good.
You know, prayer is prayer because worry is worry. Right. And so we pray because we worry. Like, sometimes because we have manipulated and misused that scripture about be anxious for nothing. Into these, like, faith is the lack of worry and anxiety. And some of us are just, we have natural responses that are anxiety and worry. Like last week. Like every morning when we keep seeing new appointments being made from the almost White House, like not even like he's not even in office yet. And there's like all this stress and pain and lament and worry because it's like, oh man, now this person's in power. Now this person's in power. This person's in power. And we start worrying and stressing. And that's okay. That's natural. Because it's those moments that we're reminded that we get a chance to trust God. In 2020, I remember in February of 2020, I was in the hospital in Jersey, and my parents weren't able to get to me because it needed to happen quick. And I was about to go to surgery. And before they wheeled me out, I called my mom and I said, "Where's Dad?" And she said, "Papa's gone." And I said, "Well, I need you to pray." And my mom's a prayer warrior. And my mom prayed a prayer that I think deepened my faith more than I'd ever experienced. In the midst of me, like, in agonizing pain, about to undergo surgery with none of my family within 1,000 miles, mom prayed and said, "Thank you for this chance to be healed by you." And in my faith, he said to me, "What if we, in the most painful moments, said, God, thank you for us to giving us this chance to experience you at work."
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I'll never forget that. Just a glorious thing to pray. Gosh, what a moment. Nish, I'm so curious when you talk about your family. So, fourth generation preacher?
Fourth generation.
So what is your denominational background? Were y'all like?
I grew up Baptist, missionary Baptist, which missionary is like Baptist, the black Southern Baptist, right? My dad pastored until he's still pastoring, my home church. My grandfather pastored in a little country church sitting on wooden stilts out in eastern Kentucky until he passed away. My great-grandfather pastored until he passed away. He pastored many, many churches. He was almost a circuit pastor. He would pastor till the church grew for a couple of years and then moved to the next town.
Okay.
That kind of thing. And so I kind of grew up in that. And my mom, it was really the preaching generations are on my mom's side of the family. And then when my parents were engaged, 3 months before the wedding, my dad announced his call to preach, and mom was like, "Oh God, here we go again."
Wow. Oh, I love that.
And now my brother and I are both preachers.
That's fantastic.
But it's one of those things where I was grateful that even in the midst of that, and even coming from such a strong conservative Baptist, like traditional background, my father always taught us, I want you to believe what you believe because it's what's in your heart, not it's because what I told you to.
Mm. Wow.
And it was that part of that faith journey that led me to where I am today, that leads me to be a person who literally in my ministry advocates for other people for a living. I feel like that's my call in life is advocating for people. Because I believe in a God that is so much bigger than we make God out to be.
Yes. That's so wise of your dad. Cause I feel like they're kind of so many, my sense of what elders are really are they're ostensibly they're supposed to release us to be able to have the journey that we need to have, but it's often not, you know, that's rare that that really happens. So the wisdom of being able to say, I want you to have your own experience. I want what you to believe, what you believe to be what you believe. I mean, like, and even knowing probably that may inevitably might mean that you don't land necessarily in all the same places that he would.
Right.
But that sense of permission to go on the journey that you needed to go.
Literally, when I went to, after 10 years of serving as the minister of music at his church, I was on church staff. He became the pastor later that year. But after 10 years of serving as the minister of music at that church, I turned in my resignation and said I was leaving the church because I felt like God was leading me somewhere else. And where part of my family was like lamenting, like, oh my God, he's leaving the church, he's leaving the faith. And my dad said to me, I knew you were looking for a God that was bigger than this.
Wow.
Not in a way to insult or negate anything that we believed or we were raised to believe.
Yeah.
But said in a way that affirmed me in saying, you need to work out your own salvation.
Yes. Yes.
And your faith and how you're going to live into it. And I can't box that.
That's such, what a powerful blessing that is to say, like, I see that you need something bigger that you're supposed to. I just had a conversation on here with my friend Carlos Rodriguez a couple weeks ago, and he had in this very charismatic ministry, the whole kind of, in fact, it was whole like kind of Toronto blessing, kids to fly, like that kind of charismatic. And his mentor, years ago, and we go back to this a lot, but I think about it so often. His mentor spoke very prophetically of him, said, the time's going to come when you're going to come to me and tell me about the next move of God. And when you do, I'm going to say, it's not God. When I say it's not God, keep going. And sure enough, that time came not long after that. You know, it's like he started moving more towards justice and all of these things. And sure enough, it was like, Carlos, you can't do this. It's not God. It was like, actually, you gave me a prophetic word.
that isn't going to happen. Yes.
But like that sense of permission is so, it's just so powerful. I know, and I want us to be able to eat and hang out and do other things, but and you've been so generous with your time already. I'd love to know, because so many of the folks I think who listen to this podcast are on this kind of journey where there has been some kind of movement from where they start. We're landing somewhere else. And in some cases, rejecting faith, walking away, now trying to figure out how to reintegrate. What does prayer look like now? What does worship look like now?
Mm-hmm.
So was there ever a sense of that for you of kind of having to walk away to then come back? Or was it more a sense that you felt like there was enough room for you to pursue something that was bigger, kind of even within the tradition?
Yeah. So I didn't know where, cause like even when I left the Baptist church, when I left home, I went to the Pentecostal church for a while.
Okay.
And then God led me to lead worship and to be in ministry in like six other denominations.
Wow.
Not like I was searching, but God just kept, I kept praying every time, God lead me to where you want me to
be.
And somehow or another, God led me to a 97% white United Methodist church in the middle of central Pennsylvania.
Wow.
I hadn't even heard of it. And I was like, okay, God, this is you, you know? Mm. And once again, my family helped me pack up the truck and we went. And it began to be this whole different journey because it was then that God showed me where I was hiding in my own ministry.
Mm.
And where God was trying to bring things out of me and giftings out of me that I was nervous or not even allowed to be able to share in the environments that I was in before.
Mm.
And it put me in an environment that said, we're going to push your gifts.
Mm.
The first thing they said was, the first thing my senior pastor said to me when I got, because I was one of the teaching pastors there, he said, I'm going to need you to get from behind the piano and get in the pulpit. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. Because in previous places, it wasn't that way. It was kind of like, stay over there, do what you need to do. Even though I had already been a licensed minister, called to preach and all that kind of stuff. But there was all these different dynamics. You know how that goes.
Of course.
What are you, where's your theology? Where's your, you know, political sense? All this kind of stuff. And God kept on shifting me. And I remember, again, it was like that stuff that's in you starts to come out. My mom's favorite scripture she always used to say to us was, whatsoever state I'm in, I've learned to be content. And I really didn't know what that meant for her, but what it meant for me was, God, I have no idea why you have me in this situation that I'm in, this place that you have me serving in. And even like right now, when God takes me from Jersey Shore to the middle of Indiana, of Republican, 96% white Indiana, and I'm like, God, what is it? And I, and what I'm learning is that in my faith, where I need to be is, God, for whatever reason, you have me here. I'm here for it. When you get through with me, send me somewhere else. So I'm content with whatever it is that you need me to do here. And for some of us, that's a physical location. For some of us, it's an emotional state. Some of us, it's as a season of our lives. For some of it, it's the place we are in the church. Whatever it is. For me, that's been the calming assurance that says, God, whatever it is that you have me here for, I'm good with it.
I tell you what, I felt the heat on the throat tonight when you were singing, and you said that you, you know, you heard your mom sing it, but singing through it all tonight, it felt like that. That was one of those things. I mean, what a lyric that is, an Andre Crouch lyric, but that through it all, that kind of goodness. When you talk about, and maybe this brings us full circle a little bit even to what tonight has meant, and I think will mean, because I really do feel that, not trying to be super prophetic, but I really do feel like this time is going to create space for a whole lot of other people who are kind of take this in different ways. But I'm curious what it's meant for you, that sense of, and even talking about being in very rural, red, largely white, conservative, Republican, Indiana, and all those things. Tonight, and I don't feel like this needs over-explanation to our audience because so many folks are on the same journey, but I know, like, even some of the conversations I'm having with folks, and, you know, the more you know about me and some of my story, there's been a lot of resistance for a long time within certain kinds of spaces. So I think most people know where I'm coming from, but it's for people who maybe still don't grasp the sense of, like, okay, because, you know, even tonight, making room for, like, grief and lament, I don't think any of that's coming from, it's not like our teen loss, doesn't have anything to do with, like, the Democratic Party. What is it? Because I do feel like I'm still having to explain that to some folks right now in terms of why this election in particular, there's a different kind of grief for a lot of folks and a different level of feeling unsafe. Maybe even though it's like the third time that this person is running all that.
And I think that's where I said, when we had this conversation in West Lafayette a couple of weeks ago, I said to some of the pastors there, we need to be careful in this season about naming what we're resisting as a political party. Because that's not it. The Bible, like I said, tells us that the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. We're not wrestling against flesh and blood. And hear me when I say this, I'm not trying to call anybody or any person or any political party the devil or evil or anything like that. But there is a presence of evil and oppression and injustice that is trying to prevail in this moment. And until we get in that spirit mind, like, that's why we have to deal with what's going on the inside, because until we do, we don't recognize that it like I say it all the time at work, like, that I'm not wrestling with a person.
That's right.
I'm dealing with systems.
Yeah.
With principalities, with spiritual wickedness in high places.
That's right.
What I'm saying?
That's right.
And sometimes people hear that and they're saying, oh, he's talking about the person in charge. No, I'm talking about systems.
Yes.
And societies and the way we have allowed our culture to form in ways that continue to oppress people, that continue to try to rule and lord over people in ways that, you know, we keep calling this the land of the free, the home of the brave, but we really don't want you to be free.
Yeah.
We just want you to be free in a way that's comfortable for us.
Yeah.
Live your life in a way that's comfortable for us, whether that has to do with women, whether it has to do with queer people, whether it has to do with people of color, immigrants, anything like that.
Yes.
Please live your life in a way that makes me comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. when really we found this, we founded this country because we were trying to get away from monarchies,
right?
Right, in a place that was saying we're going to demand how you live,
yeah,
and the God you worship, and yeah, the church, kind of church you're a part of, and if you're not, you got to go,
yeah,
right, and that just doesn't work.
That's right.
But we have continued to do this, and so until we get to that spiritual mindset that says we're wrestling with something that's yeah, bigger,
yeah,
that this isn't a me against you,
yeah,
that there's a cloud of injustice,
yeah, that's
and
right,
and oppression and evil that's hanging you.
That's right. I so appreciate just your wisdom in approaching that spiritually, because I think in so many ways, and that, you know, one thing's, I feel like I keep having these conversations with folks trying to explain the way that why I think some of these particular systems and structures and political principalities in our time, you know, even the language that's used when you start talking about you know, this, the poisoning the blood and that kind of thing. It's like, okay, you're really getting proximity to some spiritual powers that are oppressive and just kind of, and maybe we can wrap here though. I'd love to do this all night. What does it mean though, like as a person who's still obviously leading a lot of people in worship who are on different places in this kind of journey and may legitimately not be aware of some of these, how some of these things are playing out in people's real lives, or maybe they know and they're still choosing, but you know, when you're in some of these spaces, because I know you travel a lot, even, and especially like in Indiana and some of these spaces, we're then taking everybody into worship. What does that mean for you, knowing? And I mean, you even referenced this in Sing Tonight, this sort of like seeing the face of our friends and knowing, you know, maybe they're at different places. So what does that look like for you right now, being where you are, naming some of these things the way that you're naming them, but still leading people sometimes in worship who maybe are not in the same place and aren't seeing the world the same way?
Yeah. In 2016, I remember having one of the worst experiences in my ministry ever, when two of my biggest supporters heard me speaking out because a church, the night before Election Day, a church in Mississippi had gotten burned down.
Oof.
And it was evident that it was an act of voter suppression.
Mm.
But all of these news stories were saying, well, this came from Hillary supporters, this came from Trump supporters and everything. Mm. And nobody was seeing, they've been burning down churches in Mississippi during election season for 60 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's how they scare people from voting.
Yeah.
We will burn your church down and then we'll burn your house down. That's why they burn crosses. You know what I mean? It's just is what it is. And I remember having this, hearing some of the most hateful and nasty things from two of my biggest supporters because they weren't seeing that this was an evil injustice. They were seeing this is a red and blue, left and right,
right, yeah,
Trump and Hillary. And they said some of the most hurtful and evil things that I ever heard. And I remember going into the office with my senior pastor and one of my staff members, and they just let me get it out. I was the only black person on staff in this large church. They let me scream and cuss and holler and all these things that I needed to do for an hour because I just needed to let it out.
Yeah.
When we got done, when I was done, my pastor looked at me and said, okay, now I have two things for you. One, Christ died for them. So you got to figure out what that means for you. And two, you're still called to be their pastor.
Well,
regardless of who they decide to be tomorrow morning. So you have to figure out in that, in the same sanctifying grace, redeeming grace that God gave you, how do you then extend grace to them and be who God has called you to be in this season that they need you to be?
Wow.
And I think that's what happens with all of us, whether you're a pastor or a leader, or whether you're just a believer. How do we find space and grace to be who God needs us and calls us to be, even when it seems like evil is all around us?
Yeah.
And even when that evil sometimes speaks up through the people that we love the most.
So good, Len. What a word. And I know that'll resonate with so many people because I've just heard so many stories of folks knowing these things have always been in the water, but we have stories, especially 2016-ish and beyond, of getting rebuked, of getting called out. And then like when exercising the same discernment that you've always used, being the same, the same person in God you've always been, but now to say this thing suddenly, I don't know. It reminds me of like sort of the kind of old saying of like, you know, if you don't feel close to God, who moved? Where I want to be like, you know, some of us haven't moved a whole lot. I think y'all have moved, you know, but it's like, this is, but I just love that. What a powerful witness, and even that Wesleyan phrase of sanctifying grace, trying to find a way to love, but also still to be clear and to be true to who you are and what God's putting you to say, and like not backing off of that. And so it's so powerful to me to see you holding those things together in the way that you are, both bearing prophetic witness, but also still like, yeah, but of course I see the image of God.
It takes some self-care, some soul care. Yeah.
Well, I feel like I have been spoiled with that kind of soul care and self-care tonight. So thank you so much for tonight. Thank you for your ministry. Thank you for your work. Such an honor to have you. And I can't wait to hang out and do this again.
Yes. Thanks.
Perfect. Thank you so much. That was wonderful.